We had the one woman who went around and collected rent. That's what she did. Literally collected rent for 9 people. So, you know, when you hear value add, don't always think it's just the actual bricks and mortar. It's typically the way the business is run, and that is huge. It's a huge opportunity.
You're listening to Ice Cream with Investors, a podcast that is dedicated to teaching you how to better invest your money so that you can live a more intentional life. I'm your host, Matt Foer, and it is my goal to teach and empower you to remove the roadblocks to your financial success.
All right, Liz, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we like to start with the difficult questions here. What's your favorite?
I like that.
What's your favorite ice cream?
Oh, cookie dough, hands down.
So here in Nashville, they've got this place that does cookie dough ice cream kind of mixed, and I don't know what it's called, but it's downtown and it is delicious. It's not like traditional ice cream where it's mixed in like that. It's straight cookie dough bites and it is delicious.
You're giving me a reason to come, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. If we're up in the, I think you're in the Pennsylvania area these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Outside of Philadelphia. Yeah.
If we're up that way, do you have any good ice cream joints you recommend?
We do. We have some really good, like, little boutique, you know, places that I think are like part gelato, part ice cream. You know, I just like, I go on taste, you know, I don't get too into the weeds. I'm like, if it tastes good, I'm, you know, thumbs up.
I love it. Well, tell our listeners, what's the scoop? What do you do today?
So I am the co-founder. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur, right? So I have a few different businesses I'm involved in. But I am the co-founder of the Investor Community. So we believe that every woman has the financial right to live life on her own terms and create financial freedom for herself. So that's what we believe. And we're building a worldwide community so women can get the support they need on the financial journey. I'm also co-founder of the DeRosa Group. We are mostly a multifamily syndication company where we pool money together and buy large multifamily assets. Although we're moving into the hotel space, so we're buying a hotel, value add sort of hotel. We have a fund, so we're doing a lot of different things on the DeRosa side. And I'm a mom of two. You know, I'm involved in the community. I have my hands in a lot of different things. But so that's a little bit about me and what I'm up to.
Awesome. Well, a lot that I want to dig in there from the investor side as well as the hotel side. But before we get there, take our listeners back. Where'd your real estate journey begin?
Yeah. So my now husband and I met. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Long story short, my brother-in-law handed me Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was going to school for social work. So I wanted to open my own practice. I wanted to help people. And I feel like I'm still helping people, but I really was, I wanted to be a therapist. And so he gave me this book and I was like, I don't even know why I need to read this, Tony. And he said, just read it. And so I did. And he was the only entrepreneur that I knew. I didn't really grow up around, you know, business owners or entrepreneurs or investors. Anyway, he, that book forever changed my view. And I know that's cliche. I know probably I have a podcast so many people 400 episodes later talk about that book, but it really opened my eyes to terms and concepts I had never heard about, you know, in terms of passive income and real estate and you know, building something that can produce you something ongoingly versus you working, right, for it, that whole concept. So, you know, I then handed it to my then boyfriend. I was like, you need to read this. He was an engineer. He went to Virginia Tech. We were just chatting about and, you know, was an engineer, full-time engineer. And so we both were like, hold on, let's really look into this. We had no idea if we would be successful at it. So we started going to local RIA meetings. DIG, it's still a group today. We just actually spoke at it recently. Start taking classes a year together. And we were in our 20s. And we like on the weekends, you know, most 20-year-olds are like going out partying, having a grand old time. And we were like, let's go to a workshop on real estate, you know? But that's literally what we did when we got together. I lived in New Jersey, he lived in Philly. Anyway, long story short, a year into it, we bought our first property. We did you know, you call for rent ads and they say, call for rent ads because if the landlords are frustrated if they have a vacancy. And so this is before, I'm dating myself, right? This is 2004. This is a long time ago. But anyway, we called this gentleman and he was like, yeah, I would be interested in selling. And we bought a row home duplex in a little town called Roxborough outside of Philadelphia. And that was our first investment. It was $150,000. I want to say we put about $15,000 down. Got a loan from my father for $30,000. And that was a big deal. My dad loaned us the money. We, you know, it was our first no money, you know, no money out of our pocket deal because we didn't have any money to do that with. And that got our start in investing.
Did you all flip that home or did you buy it turnkey?
You know, we bought it and renovated it. So it, neither. So we bought it, renovated it. And that was, you know, I don't know. I'm sure you listen, you have your adults that listen, but I was going to say, you know, a shit show. But we renovated it. It was just like, we had to evict our first tenant. We learned a lot on that first deal. Then we moved to New Jersey. And so we said, let's do a 1031 into another property. And that's what we ended up doing. We actually did pretty well with the property. We had it about a year and a half-ish. And then we really got our start in buying properties in New Jersey.
After the self-proclaimed shit show of your first property, why did you decide to 1031 and keep doing it? Did you just see the equity explode in it? Or what made you want to keep going down this route?
It's a good question. You know, I think for us, we're like, we knew if we like put our minds to something and you learn from the mistakes, we knew we could get this right. I mean, it's interesting. Real estate, buying real estate and landlording isn't like rocket science necessarily, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of things that are a lot more complicated than this business. And I'll say there are so many pieces of the puzzle that can go wrong, right? So it's this interesting business that it's not rocket science. We're not doctors, right? We're not performing, you know, surgery. But it's still a business. There's a lot of little pieces that one thing goes wrong. It's like, oh, I didn't know about that yet. Especially when you get into construction, renovating, you know, dealing with tenants. So yeah, we actually did build some equity in the property. We did. We ended up when we sold it, we did have money to then put into the next property. So we felt like, okay, we learned. We had some challenges. But it wasn't like this complete like negative cash flow, negative situation that deterred us. And we knew that we can just make the changes as we go.
Yeah.
We've had other properties that have given us more of a headache, to be honest with you, over the tenure, but that wasn't it. It was just a lot to handle at first, you know?
Yeah. When you said it's not rocket science, I mean, I think there are more dumb millionaires in real estate than any other industry out there.
Oh, absolutely.
And I certainly know a few of them.
Yes.
But also, I think that there are a lot of things that could go wrong from how you renovate, the process at which you renovate,
correct.
What you do first, what you do last. I think I even read a story where you actually replaced an entire roof on a property one time and then had to tear down the house.
You had to bring it up, Matt. You had to bring that up.
I want to ask, sometimes we get so interested in our successes that we forget about the failures and the lessons that we learned along the way.
No, that's so true.
So I want to hear that story.
Oh, I'm sure I'll definitely tell you. So after the rental, right, this first duplex, we ended up moving to, you know, got married 2005. My husband and I got married and he quit his job and said, I want to do real estate full time. And I'm like, well, one of us needs to like make some money. So let me keep doing. And I wasn't a social worker. I ended up getting a job in sales and consulting. So I started doing that. He quit his job and started the business. So that was our first flip that happened. So he is right in our town too, in Bordentown. So anyway, we had people come through and a contractor and say, do this, do that. And you just don't know what you don't know, you know, and when you're, especially when you're renovating. And so we had a lot of people say, you know, yeah, this is totally salvageable. And it was a very dilapidated building, dilapidated property. It was like a 2,500, 3,000 square foot property, single family home. And the goal was to flip it. So we, for whatever reason, put the roof on, you know, got a brand new roof and was about to do the renovations of the structural part of the property. And then we had a structural engineer walk through and he had not, or I think it was a he, I mean, my memory's not serving me. I mean, I'm pretty sure it was a he. He walked through and he had not been through the property yet, right? So we didn't have anybody that was like that special, like of a specialist yet. So when he was walking through, he goes, this is not structurally sound. This property, you cannot continue renovating. There's no way because of X, because of Y, and because of Z, you know? So we just put a roof on this property because it doesn't matter. You're going to have to tear the property down. And they were like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And then we got another person and like three people later that were in that type of specialty all verified the same thing. So yeah, it was a costly mistake, but never do that again, you know? And I joke around because now I have, you know, Andres and I put together a mentorship program for women that are scaling 5 to 10 deals. And I think back, I'm like, had I had a group like what we have, right? And what we've built, I don't think I would have made that mistake. I would have ran it by some people. We had no one to run things by. So for many years, I always say like my husband and I really grew our company, but we propelled much later in our tenure than the beginning. Like the first 8 years was like just a snail was moving. We'd make mistakes. You know, it was almost like had I had more mentorship and had we just had more mentorship, I think we would have maybe accelerated a little bit more. But we learned through those ways. You're going to pay one way or the other. I believe you're going to pay for the education, you're going to pay for the mentorship, or you're going to pay for your mistakes to not do it again.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone that gets away with all of that without one of those three things.
Yeah. And it's often said that real estate is a team sport. And I completely agree with you. If I look back at it, my first 4 years, it was just me. Now I had reached out to property managers who knew a contractor, who knew somebody and those sorts of things. And I kind of grew that way. But yeah. I mean, at a snail's pace is a very, very nice way to put it. It wasn't until I decided, okay, I'm going to invest in a mentorship. And if nothing else happens through this, at least I will meet some people along the way and hear some right. different ideas. And that's ultimately how I ended up starting to scale from a capital raising side, putting deals together, because what I found is I didn't know anything. I mean, there is so much to this business that you just can't know it all. And you definitely can't be a specialist. Yeah. That's right. That's right. So if I'm listening to this right now, how do I go about finding a mentorship program, or maybe how did you find one?
Yeah. You know, we did actually get some coaching when we went from small multi to larger multi. We did get into a coaching, and that was the best money we'd ever spent. But we were reluctant to do it. We're like, this is going to be a stupid mentorship program that nothing's going to happen. And I'm like, God, well, I wish we did that 5 years ago. You know, I think a lot of ways, not every mentorship is right for everyone, right? And there's so many different mentorship programs, there's so many coaching programs, and they're not all created equal. So I think the biggest thing, if you're listening to this, to do always is to kind of look forward to say, where do I want to be in 5 years? You know, am I someone who's looking to replace my income with a different business? Am I just looking to, like, you know, build wealth on the sides for retirement? Am I just looking to have a few properties that I can hand along to my kids? Or am I really looking to, like, build a business, right? Those are all different avenues depending on people's interests, their the time they have left on this earth. You know, we started in our 20s. You know, would I have done what I did in my 20s now in my 40s? Absolutely not. You know, like, my husband and I want to diversify and, like, buy a business this year. It's one of our goals this year. There's no way I would operate that business, though. I'm very clear on my criteria is so different than, like, I would have been, like, in my 20s, been like, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do this. Like, you know, it's a different, you learn and hopefully grow, right? So I would say to people listening, number one, where do you want to be in 5 years? Number two, you know, where do you want to be financially? Like, where do you want to be? And then the second is, where do you want to be financially? Because ultimately, any mentorship should help yield you to where you want to go. I'd also say, do you want to be and learn from that particular mentor? Meaning, is there pieces of their life or you know, social media is a whole hoax, right? But because you never know really how that person is. But, you know, do you want to learn from that person? I believe we all have different mentors we can learn from. And that's the kind of mentorship program we put together was we have like a handful of pod mentors. And these are women experts in different areas, different niches. Then there's me and Andressa. Then there's one another, right? So, like, I believe any mentorship program, where do I want to be? What are my goals? And can I learn from different people to help me get there? Because I don't believe, like, one mentor, one person is going to whisper the secret of real estate in my ear. I like being part of programs that I can tap. Different mentors, different types of expertise, depending on what I need at that moment. But if I don't know where I want to go and how this group is going to get me there, then every mentorship is useless and it's a waste of money, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to clarify, social media is not a hoax because my kids eat everything that I make for them and they never complain at all. It's always delicious food and they're so happy that I spend hours slaving away for their dinner.
Correct.
But
correct. Correct. No, I don't mean a hoax. I mean, that's a little rough, but to get the real, you know, situation, I think you have to get to know people. You have to hear from other people. And just social media is not enough, I would say.
Completely agree. If somebody's trying to charge you just to get on the phone with them for 30 minutes or an hour to get introduced to them, that's probably not the right person.
Correct. Yeah. For example. So that's a little intense, unless you're like, you know, Reese Witherspoon or someone that yeah. warrants that.
I like this idea of tapping into different communities as well. And I would also say that you're right. No one person knows all of the right answers. So it's better Correct. To be a part of a mentorship where there is some sort of community aspect of it. You run an investment mentorship community called Invest Her, where it's really focused on bringing females into this industry. I joke that real estate conferences are probably the only place where the men's bathroom line is longer than the women's bathroom line that I've been to.
Not unless you come to InvestorCon, Matt. You have to come to. Then we convert the men's bathroom to the women's. So we have two women's bathrooms. So
There you go. But I want to broach this topic of like, it is a male dominated industry for one reason or another. And there is a big wealth transfer right now from men to women. Part of that's aging. Part of that is women working and being a part of the household, as well as men being a part of the household as well. But I want to just talk through, what have you seen with running the community and women entering this space for the first time?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because so many times I'll meet guys at conferences and I'll go up to them and say, you know, how are you doing? How's your, you know, what are you up to? And they say, oh, I'm killing it. I got 5 properties. I'm doing great. I said, that's awesome. And then I'll go up to a woman and I'll say, how are you doing? She's like, I'm just getting started. I have 5 properties. I'm just getting started. I don't know much. Literally, they have the same amount of properties, right? So I think philosophically, right, I think women, you know, do really well in investing. And sometimes they at times can undersell themselves in the business or getting into the business, because there's a little more of maybe cautiousness. I'm being very, very general right now, and very, but I do believe, you know, statistically, women outperform men as investors. However, they're more cautious in doing it. So the pendulum is not so much, are they going to be good investors, in my opinion, because they actually are great investors. I know all the women in our community that are investing. They usually make the right call. I would say, though, there's a lot of women that don't want to pull the trigger because they just don't want to make the wrong call, right? Especially when it comes to wealth building. And I don't know what it is. You know, I'll meet a lot of men, and I'm being, again, very general, but there's a little more like, I want to get this big property because of, you know, and then women are like, I just want to pass along this property to my kids. You know, there's different reasons. So I think, though, what I've come to see is that when women come together in a community, it really helps increase confidence. And that's really why we exist. So it's not so much the knowledge, right? You can Google how to flip a house, how to buy a property. It's not a knowledge gap right now. People are inundated with knowledge. If anything, people are overwhelmed with too much knowledge, I would even say. So it's not a knowledge issue for people, the barrier to entry. But in my belief, and what you see is that, like, women doing it together, women coming together and supporting each other is increasing the confidence in the pendulum versus doing it alone. You saw that this summer, right? You saw the economy was boosted by what happened in the summer in the Barbie movie, Beyonce, Taylor Swift. It wasn't because they're all female centric. It was because there was groups of women going together to do all of those things in droves, literally. And that is so much that so many news outlets said women owned the economy this summer. Right. So yep. That's the same thing for investing. So we're just literally taking that same concept to say, okay, you're not going alone to see that movie. You're doing it with a lot of other people, and it's in group. And it's the same thing here. Not that you have to invest necessarily together in the same property, but that's also happening. Women are coming together like, I'm going to run this, you do that. But when we support each other, it's like just the pendulum shifts versus me having to now do it myself. Something yeah. about that group atmosphere. And that's really what we're building on a local level, on a global level, from our investor con to our mentorship to our local meetups. That's really what it's about. That will shift the pendulum. So, you know, I want to see that article written, you know, that women are owning the investments. That's what I want to see, not just the economy.
Yeah. First of all, Barbie, not a kids movie. Don't let the title confuse you there. We took the kids on opening weekend, and it was funny for the adults. I was petrified for them. Second of all, I want to say this the right way, but one thing that I've noticed with the women in my circle is that when the topic of finance comes up and there's a group specifically of men, they're less likely to ask a question if they don't understand. Correct. Specifically with my partner, when we get back home, she'll say something like, "Hey, I heard this, but I'm not sure I really understood it." And I'm like, "Oh, well, then you missed the last 20 minutes of the conversation because that was the critical point. And so why didn't you just ask?" And I'm wondering if you've seen that in the community as well, is that not only is it a community, but you're boosting confidence in the saying that, hey, this is almost a safe space to be ignorant to these types of questions and not to feel bad about asking them so that you can get clarity and make that next move.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, right? Because I think about my own community, like neighbors that I'm around and kids. I have two young kids, so I'm around a lot of different men and women, sports. And I'll be around a bunch of guys and they'll be talking about real estate. And I'm like, do I get involved in this conversation? Do I want to get involved in this conversation? They're not even talking to me. So I almost feel alienated. And I'm like, I probably, no offense, own more than all of you put together. And
do you know who I am?
I'm saying that from an ego perspective, but it's probably the case, right? I know that. But my point is that there's something about there's a societal norms, right? What do men talk about? What do women talk about? You know, and I think all of those things still exist. I don't think you can go into any group of men and or women and say, okay, what are the top five things they're going to talk about? I don't know why it is, but women gravitate to certain topics. So the women in our community are kind of tired of some of those topics. Not that we don't want to talk about our kids or talk about this or that, but they also want to talk about investments. They also want to talk about properties they're looking to buy or businesses they're looking to buy. These are the conversations that the women in our community and a lot more women than we realize want to actually talk about, not only talk about, but as a piece of what we're talking about. So the conference that we run, women are out at the hot tub talking about properties that they're going to buy or deals they're going to do together. I'm like, that's like music to my ears versus just, you know, something that, you know, makes my ears hurt sometimes. Yeah. And they're talking about their kids and they're talking about the crazy this and that and crazy that, right? So I know that's not answering your question, but I think normalizing conversations and normalizing what people talk about and why they talk about it from a socioeconomic perspective, from a gender perspective, all of that, you know, I think is just part of our society. And so we're creating space that women can talk about these things and talk about their net worth and talk about money, not in a, like, where do they talk about that? It's just not a common thing at the pool or at the, you know, Girl Scouts event, no offense. It's just not common. I bring this up because, you know, I'm like, oh, I'll do this. And they're like, oh, that's interesting, you know. But most people don't. So I think we need to start being mindful who we spend time with and saying, what do I actually want to talk about? I want to grow. I want to learn. And it's not just about wealth building, Matt. You know, it's about their mindset, right? It's about, I mean, we go deep with the women in our community. We have a woman speaking on the main stage at our conference about boundaries. Because how can you build wealth if you don't have boundaries? That matters, especially in our world, right? Especially for people who have a hard time saying no. So my point is that it's all connected and like these are like, it's like a depth of a conversation. Money and wealth are just part of that.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that mindset piece. I think two things that I've really helped with our relationship with my partner is one, that this idea of an abundance mindset. It's okay to invest in coaching and yourself and this, that, and the other, because you can go make more money. But the way you do that is by investing in yourself. And the second idea is where you choose to invest almost matters as much as how much time you're willing to invest. So specifically, we have a lot of people in our neighborhood where our friend group that we've just had to say, hey, we're just going in two different directions. It's nice to be cordial when we're at the pool and our kids hang out and those sorts of things. But I don't want to go spend 3 or 4 hours with you on a trip to XYZ or things like that.
Absolutely. You do become who you, you become who you surround yourself with and you think like them too. And so really being mindful of that. And it's always like, if you're the smartest person in the room, that's not good either. Right. I mean, I like surrounding myself with people smarter than me and like a 3 or 4 steps ahead of me. I'm like, wow, you're doing all that. Awesome.
So, yeah. I want to switch gears on you.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of things in your career. You've done flipping, single family holds, BRRRs, multifamily, and now you've bought a hotel. So first of all, tell us where the hotel is and what interests you about the space.
Hey, fellow investors, before we dive into our next segment of the show, I wanted to take a quick moment to talk to you about a fantastic opportunity for you to invest with me. As you know, here at Ice Cream with Investors, I'm passionate about real estate investing and helping you navigate the exciting world of wealth creation through real estate. And that's why, for the first time, I'm thrilled to tell you about an opportunity for you to invest alongside of me. Over the past 3 years, I've been investing in multifamily, mobile home parks, car washes. I've even become the bank and lent out money to fellow real estate investors on a short-term basis. And now you can come join me. If you would like to jump on a call and learn more about this opportunity, head to icecreamwithinvestors.com/invest and find a time for us to connect. And now back to the show.
Yeah. Oh, it's in Oklahoma. And, you know, I'll say this, you know, the and you know this, Matt, probably too. The multifamily space has been an interesting, the general real estate economy, right, and what's happening in our world has been tougher in some ways for last year. We haven't bought a property in over a year, our team. And so, and that's being very mindful and conservative because a lot of properties just don't make sense, right, financially. And some have, and some people are killing it and buying, but still it's a time that I think there needs to be more conservativeness and you should be more careful and conscientious of what you're putting your investors in and making the right calls, right? So therefore for us, we haven't bought in some time. We started a fund last year where we're lending it out more like hard money. And that was like a little bit of a pivot. Because we had people who wanted to invest with us and we had opportunities. Just we pivoted a little bit to doing a fund last year. And now, so when we brought on a new underwriter, and I think this is a good lesson for anyone listening, is that I think you could thrive in any economy. I mean, we lived through 08. We've lived through a few different times in real estate and in business. And the key is to like mitigate your risk, right? And that's the always the most important thing. How do you thrive and mitigate your risk, right? And so that's the question we always ask ourselves. So as we were moving into, you know, the new year, and is it actually we had we were looking at a number of different hotels, the end of 2023, we brought in an underwriter who came from that industry. So that's all he used to do is underwrite for hotels, you know. And okay, how do you manage them? You know, what are the risks? What are the pros? What are the cons? He brought so much wealth of knowledge to the table that it mitigated our risk, you know, because it is a pivot when you go from one type of asset to a different one. You want to mitigate your risk. So we really had a lot of comfort in him, you know, really leading that charge. And he's an underwriter, right? So, and he's underwritten very well in the multifamily space, more conservative, but strong, like really making really good calls. So we felt very comfortable. And as we learned about it, so I don't know much about Oklahoma, to be honest with you, but I do know is that Oklahoma is thriving, and a lot of people who are investors do very well in Oklahoma. And I don't really know all the reasons why, but in terms of like stability, I'll say what I'm learning, because I'm not an expert by any means, but in terms of like appreciation, in terms of cash flow, what I'm understanding is that you start making cash flow day one, you know, in a lot of these types of projects, because it's much more of a cash flow sort of play than a long, like huge appreciation, which you might see in like Class C versus a Class A, right? Type of right. Where we come in our world. So for those reasons, and for like the returns that we're seeing, and for the stability of the asset, we like all that. There's some repositioning, like slight repositioning that you can do in terms of value add, but nowhere near what we're used to in multifamily. We buy really usually big turnaround projects. That's what has been our kind of like tenure in investing. This is different. It's not quite the same. So it's a little more of like in terms, I think there's a little bit of a conservativeness to it, because you're like, okay, it's not like this big risk, right? Right. I think the key is, do you have someone in your community or on your team that can help you mitigate that risk? And so new asset classes make sense, but if it's you having to figure it all out, there will be a learning curve. And I'm sure there's going to be a learning curve, right? It's not, we're not going to get away with any sort of mistake. But I do believe when you have team members or people to lean on that have that expertise, you are mitigating. You're kind of tapping into their expertise as though you have it. And I think there's a lot to be said for that, especially right now.
Is that a space that you plan to continue to expand in?
We'll see, you know. No, I think that the goal is to have the diversification of different asset classes in less competitive landscapes. So yes, it's less competitive. It wasn't like you're going in and bidding on an apartment building and there's like 12 other people overbidding and overpriced already. It's like it becomes, you know, old. That whole strategy is just old, and it's like I don't want to spend our energy there. What we're finding is there's a lot less competition, which is a good thing. Now it's a matter of kind of, you know, understanding all the different elements of it and leaning heavily into property management and how they do it, you know, because we're obviously going to have a company managing. But yeah, so have you on it in 6 months. And I, you know, I know enough to, I'm not in the day to day. I didn't underwrite the deal, but yeah, that's my understanding is strategically I've been involved in those kind of conversations.
Yeah, it's definitely a interesting segment. I don't know much about the hotel space. We don't own any hotels. We haven't underwritten any hotel. Well, we've had two that we've kind of looked at, but ultimately after the second call, we decided not to go forward with them. But what the theme is that a lot of people in 2022 just wanted to get out of their house. They've been locked in forever. 2022, they left. 2023, they flew abroad. And what I'm hearing a lot of themes is that 2024 and 2025 will be a lot more domestic spending. So I'm not going to spend $10,000 to go fly my kids to Europe. I'd rather just spend, you know, hop in a car and head to Oklahoma and go check out some cool sites out that way. So it is an interesting little segment out there. I don't know much about it.
You know, it's funny because I know how. When I've gone, like we go to Airbnbs, yes. We'll rent houses, yes. But we do use hotels. You know, we went to go visit some friends in Pittsburgh, and we stayed at like a Hampton Inn. And I will say that I had an experience like that 1 month. We stayed in like three different hotels for whatever reason. There was just weekend activities happening, and they were all mismanaged. They're all poor. I should say poorly managed. So just from that perspective, that to me like screams opportunity because it's like a mismanaged apartment building. I don't know where the management. I think it's an okay managed property, the one that we're going to be purchasing. But I think that's an opportunity because often, Matt, people always think value add means dilapidated, means exterior, interior. But you know, value add is literally just repositioning an asset. From a management perspective, from a streamlined perspective, from a processes, from a tech, often tech. I mean, one of my favorite assets was a 49 unit we bought, and it was a beautiful loft style apartment complex. It didn't actually need a ton of aesthetics from the interior and exterior. What it needed was to be managed differently. You know, we had the one woman who went around and collected rent. That's what she did. Literally collected rent to 49 people. So, you know, when you hear value add, don't always think it's just the actual bricks and mortar. It's typically the way the business is run, and that is huge. It's a huge opportunity. So just want to mention that.
Thank you for saying that, because I hate the word value add at this point because I've been on social media and seen it so many times.
It's hard to understand that, what people really mean.
But that's exactly what we say is like, we look for assets where we can add some sort of value, and we own some car washes, for instance, and that's just literally putting the chemicals on our chemical contract. By that alone, we can reduce that expense in the line item by 30%, which increases our overall NOI, which increases the value of the property. One thing, value add, nothing in terms of construction or new signage or anything like that.
Correct. Yeah.
Liz, I want to be cognizant of your time and transition us now into our last round. We're calling this the four toppings. Our first one is, what is your favorite book, or what is a book you've read recently that's given you a paradigm shift?
I'm reading a book called Master Your Emotions. And that's been really helpful for me in terms of just like personal growth, teaching my kids, all the above. So I'm really enjoying that a lot. I have it somewhere over here, but yeah, it's called Master Your Emotions.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. He who controls the emotions will win most of the time is kind of what I teach our son. our second one is, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
You know, I had early on my brother-in-law, I shared with him that we lost $50,000 on a project. And it was a big deal. You know, I mean, $50,000 is a big deal at any point because I'm very frugal and cheap. But at that point in our business, it felt like a gazillion dollars, right? It felt so much money. And he said to me, he goes, great, And I'm like, why are you saying great? Why are you congratulating me? It doesn't feel like a congratulations. I just lost the money. I didn't make it. I lost it. And he goes, no, the quicker you lose money, the quicker you learn the lessons you need to learn. And mm-hmm. I really was appreciative of that. And I've given that advice to other people, like almost like good. Because now that's a mistake that won't happen again. And you never learn as much as you need to learn when there's money involved. You learn the most usually then, because there's a lot of emotion there. Speaking of emotion. So I thought that was what, I mean, I remember where we were sitting. I remember how he said it, you know, and I've gotten a lot of advice. And I think that's one of the most helpful things. So kind of like failing into it and then moving on as fast as you can and learning the lessons and moving on. I think that's super helpful in my career, getting that advice early on.
Yeah. Every bit of your success is probably due to some sort of failure along the way too.
Absolutely.
Our third one is, what are you most proud of in your life?
That's a good question. You know, I'd say one of the most proud moments was when we got, I don't know if you heard my husband talk about this, but we had a close to $1 million or $750,000 stolen from us from like a mini Bernie Madoff type of situation. We did a 1031 from a 18 unit into a over 200 unit. And a couple of weeks before closing, we found out that we got this money stolen, not just our own money, our investors' money. And so we were shy about $500,000 to get to the closing table for that 200 unit. And it was right before Christmas. My kids were young. This wasn't right when we started. So we moved through that with such like grace and like power, and we got to the closing table. We, you know, called some people, paid a very high interest amount, but got the money, got to the closing table, had the asset. And then we ended up transitioning the equity that we had to the investors to make them whole. We ended up selling that building, getting all their money back and then some, and everyone did very well on that sales right before COVID. We sold it. And it was just like a great, great, great project for everyone, even the people that we had to make whole, and we even made money in the process. And we got about 75% back of that money that was stolen, because this guy was a real smart guy and just bought a bunch of assets. But I think the biggest thing I learned and what I'm proud of there is that we just did one. We had this incredibly hard situation in front of us, and we just took one step every day. And so the lesson is like, when you have something that seems so insurmountable and so heavy that it can feel like it can crumble you, but if you literally take one step, and we knew we had to get to closing, that's all that mattered the next 2 weeks. And then we knew we needed to make our investors whole. And then we knew we needed to really have a great asset to manage and control. So that's the thing I'm probably one of the most professionally, the most proud of, and starting Investor.
Very, very difficult situation. I don't think I've ever heard that story. It does remind me of something I saw today. Pat Summitt was a legendary women's basketball coach at University of Tennessee, the GOAT of all coaches. And unfortunately, she contracted Alzheimer's and passed way too early. And one of her players was asked, like, you know, what did Pat teach you and the lessons that you learned? And she said, I remember during that time, somebody asked her how she got through it. And her answer was left foot, right foot, breathe, repeat. And so I encourage everybody who's going through a difficult situation to just think, like, how do you take that first step? How do you make the second step? Pause, do it again. And so very commendable on you all to do that too, because you could have easily chalked that up to, hey, we were scammed. We didn't know. You didn't know. I'm sorry, but you made everybody mostly whole, it sounds like, if not fully whole, which is
fully
very
whole.
Commendable.
Yeah, fully whole, and they got the returns, and it all kind of worked out, but it was it didn't
stressful.
Happen overnight.
Yeah. So our fourth and final one is, if you could sit down and eat a bowl of ice cream with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
God, there's so many people, you know, there's so many people right now I want to, like, you know, I gotta get on their podcast. You know, I would say like Mother Teresa. I'd love to just, I don't know if she ate ice cream, not really sure, but she just, I've always like emulated, I've always like adored her and followed her and appreciated her. I think she was a really strong lady. She wasn't just service oriented. She was very service oriented, but she had like this inner strength. And as I've grown as a leader and as an entrepreneur, I see myself as super service oriented and helpful. But I also see like I have this really strong sense of strength in me too, which I've always had, but kind of like using those two things, like, you know, power and peace. And that's what she represented to me. And I'd love to just have a bowl of ice cream and say, is that right? Like, tell me more about how did you do this and then that? And how did you overcome this and that? And I'd love to hear what she had to say.
170 some odd episodes in, that is the first time we've heard Mother Teresa, and probably a really good one. I haven't heard that one, so I like it.
Yeah,
like
I'm it. A unique one.
There you go. There you go. Well, Liz, fantastic conversation. Thanks for coming on the show. If our listeners wanted to reach out to you, learn more about InvestHer, or check out your podcast, where is the best place we could point them?
Yeah, our website, therealestateinvesther.com, is the best place. You can join our free Facebook community by going there. You can join our free events. And we have InvestHerCon coming up. It's 500 women come out. We have 30 speakers, 40 companies come out. We're doing it in Austin, Texas, June 2nd through 4th, and at the beautiful Omni in Austin. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be the event. If you're a woman investing, starting out, or thriving and growing your portfolio, come out. It's going to be, it feels like this large retreat with your 500 best friends, but it's a very connected community, high level conference. So I'd love to see as many women there as possible.
Awesome. We will link all those in the show notes. And then Liz, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Thank you for listening to Ice Cream with Investors. If you like what we serve you here, it would mean the world to me if you would like, subscribe, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app.